Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin, brought to you in Eretz HaKedesh, is daf Chav Dalet. And we're holding at the bottom of Chav Gimel Amud Beis, and we've been talking about the Machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And the question is that according to the way the Chachamim understand it, there's no problem for an Eved to be Eved Knani, to be Payday himself. If somebody, the way we came out, is that it's talking about if somebody gave him money on condition that the other doesn't have it. But before we understood that, we said that according to the Chachamim, the Eved Knani can be Payday himself if somebody else gives him money. And according to Rabbi Meir, you cannot. So we had three stages in understanding that Machlokas. Initially, we thought that there seems to be a straight-out question about whether there exists such a concept of the Eved having his own money. So according to Rabbi Meir, Eved can't have his own money. Ein kinyan la Eved below Rabbah. And according to Chachamim, an Eved can have his own money. Then we revised that, according to Rav Sheshet, and we said, no, everybody agrees that an Eved can't have his own money. The question over here is where somebody creates a catch-22 situation. Namely, he says, I'm giving you, Eved, this money on condition that the master doesn't have any part of it. So what happens then? So according to Chachomim, basically what you're saying is, I'm giving you this money, I'm not that you shouldn't have the money, which makes no sense. And the Tanai is Bato, because of this oscillation, and therefore, because it's a catch-22, if he has the money, so then the other gets the money. If he doesn't have the money at all, so then he wasn't mekayem the giving. So, I mean, what happens? The moment he gives it to him, what happens? So therefore, we're mevatel the Tanai completely. It makes no sense, the Tanai, and we're left with the Nesina. And the question, therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, is that there's no possible way for this Nesina to work, because it cannot go to the Eved. It always goes, this is the way some of the Rishonim and Achronim understood it, it always goes directly to the Odin. So if it didn't go there, then it didn't go anywhere. So it has to go to the Odin. The third way we understood it was actually the way that Rabbi Lozer understood it yesterday, and he tied it, everybody agrees that if you just gave it Amanacha in the Rabcha Rishuspo, then the Eved doesn't get it. But the question is, what if you gave the money on condition that this money is your shichura money? So then that would mean that giving it directly is essentially giving it to the Adin for the purposes of shichura. And therefore, it should help in order for the Eved to go out l'cheiras, according to the Rabbanan Mashenkin, according to Rabbi Meir, even in such a case, it doesn't go at all to the Eved, and therefore it's not coming from him to be Kena. And Tosfos understood yesterday, the Rabbi Yotam understood yesterday, that according to the approach of Reb Sheshes, in the event that you gave it with that understanding, and therefore it wouldn't end up going to the Odin, if the Eved takes that money and gives it to the Odin, then even Rabbi Meir would agree that that is considered to be a shichur, because basically it never was anybody's until it was given for that purpose. Okay, so we had these three understandings. But according to this, the way that comes out is that Rabbi Meir is the one who holds that it doesn't help. It doesn't help to give something to an Eved with a condition that it's for a purpose that would prevent it from being used for anything else, and therefore it belongs essentially to the Eved. Now the question over here is we have a similar situation, and remember that when we introduced the sugya, we pointed out that whatever one's opinion is about Eved, kinyan below Rabbo, is also the din of Isha, kinyan below Baala. So because of that, we're able to ask the question that we're about to ask. Romi de Rabbi Meir, de Rabbi Meir, on the bottom of Amud Beis, V'rami d'rabbanan ad'rabbanan. We seem to have a contradiction in these shitas. Each one of them seems to reverse themselves in the following bright, the Tanya. In isha podat ma'aser sheni b'lo chomesh. And remember that the halacha is Ariel, we haven't seen you in so long. Are we going to get at least to see the real thing, or we're just going to see this picture? Or maybe
we're working on it, Trevi. We've got some technical difficulties. Hopefully soon.
These technical difficulties have been going on for quite some few weeks, months. All right. We're looking forward. So now, note that the halacha is that if a person is poda, ish et ma'asro, a person is poda his own ma'aser sheni, the halacha is that he has to add a chomesh being 25% of the original amount, which is 20% of the total. Now, if somebody else goes and is poda that ma'aser sheni for that person, then if it's not that person's money, then it would be, the price would be whatever the price is, without any additional chomesh. How about if his wife is poda his ma'aser sheni for him? So over here it says in the Braita that a woman has to add, if she's married to the guy, his wife has to add a chomesh too. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Isha poda ma'aser sheni below chomesh, that actually she can be part of the Ma'aser Sheni without adding the additional 25%. Now you see where the Gemara is going with this, right? Because according to Rabbi Meir, he is the one who was just very makbid in saying that there's no way that she could have her own money. So there's no way the Eved could have her own money. So if there's no way she could have her own money, then that means that she's using the money of her husband. But then that would be included in needing to pay the chomesh. Because if you're putting part of the ma'aser sheni of a person with that person's money, then you're just doing your shlichus for him and you have to still pay the fifth. So therefore, we want obviously we see where we're going, but we just want to speak it out so we can understand whose money it is. Seichidam. If we're talking about the husband gives her money, and she uses that money to be paid to the ma'aser of her husband, so then she's just a shliach. And obviously, shlichus in the balka avda, if you give anybody money and tell him to be poda your ma'aser sheni, of course he's going to have to be ma'aser chomesh. You can't pretend it's not you who's doing it. Therefore, it's got to be talking about that she's using her own money. Bezuz dida, u'ma'aser dida, and then didah, and then it's his ma'aser and her money. So then how would it be possible that she would be chayiv to pay a chomesh? How could the Tanakama argue? It's clear that she wouldn't pay a chomesh. It says ish et ma'asro. And over here, this is not ish et ma'asro, not his wife, lo isha. If she's being put her husband's ma'aser and she's using her own money, so then how could the Rabbanan say that you would be chayiv? So where would we have the machlokas? Obviously, where the machlokas revolves around the issue about whether this is her money or whether it's his money, right? That's what it boils down to. So what would that be? Elalavki hai gavna, we're talking about our case. Somebody else gave her a mana, and he told her, you can have this money on condition that it's used only for being poda, your husband's miser. Okay, so now that means that the Tanakhama is saying that the halacha is that she still has to pay a chomesh. So now that means, and you guys missed the Gemara that we had yesterday, which is where we found the Talmidim of Shmuel playing tiddlywinks. Huh? I finally got to the place in Shas where I was going to get you guys, and you don't show up. Looking forward to this all year. I can't believe you did this. You knew, because you came the next day, so it's obvious you knew. Vicious. Okay. So now, if the Rabbanan say that she still has to pay a fifth, so what are they saying? That the Tanai doesn't help, and that the money still goes directly to her husband. In which case, by the case of the Eved, they would say the same thing. The Tanai doesn't help, in a case where you gave money to the Eved Amanat, that this money is used to be poda you. So then the Tanai would not help. But we just had in our mission that Tanai does help according to Rabbanan. And that Rabbi Meir is also saying the opposite, because Rabbi Meir is saying that it is a good Tanai and that therefore the money does belong to her and not to the husband. And because of that, she does not add the Chomesh, which is a complete reversal of the two approaches, Rabbi Meir's approach and the Rabbanan's approach. So V'yibcha Shemana, we just learned the exact opposite. Now, as I explained, Om Rabbi, you're right. Obviously, this Braita is messed up, and it has things backwards. You're going to have to flip the Shitot over here in the Braita. It's Rabbi Meir who says there's no way to avoid paying the Chomesh, and it's the Rabbanan who say there is a way to avoid paying the Chomesh. Rava says, no. There's a way to make this work out perfectly well. How is that? Because we're dealing with a very special situation over here. The special situation is that we're talking about Meiser. Okay, that gives us an opening to another machlokas that you didn't take into consideration. That other machlokas is, what is the status of Maaser? According to Rabbi Meir, Meiser Sheni belongs to Hegdash. It does not belong to you. If we take that machlokas into consideration, is it Momon Gavoa or is it Momon Hedyat? We end up with a completely different explanation. And I'll tell you what the case is. Liolam lo tepuch. What we're talking about over here is Hocha. V'ma'aser de'ata mibeinasha askin. What happened over here is, this woman's father died. He had Meiser. Fine, she inherited that Meiser. So therefore, the question is, who owns what over here? According to Rabbi Meir, the Meiser is Mamon Hegdash. And since it's Mamon Hegdash, so how would the Baal be Kona it? The Baal is only Kona things that come as an inheritance from Hedyot. Fine, so then what would we do with it normally? We would say, if she inherited Perot, we would sell those Perot, we would buy Karka, that would become Nichse Malug, and he would eat the products of that Karka, or the rental on that, whatever money is produced by it. But since over here, he's not Kona it, because the whole din that the Rabbanan gave, that a husband is able to take the rights to the Tvua of the Isha, is, in terms of a Nichse Malug, while they're married, was only said about things that are Momen Hedyat. But according to Rabbi Meir, this is Momen Gavoa, there was no such takana. So therefore, when she goes ahead and she's paid it, this Meiser Sheni, with her husband's money, yes, you're 100% right. According to Rabbi Meir, it's got to be her husband's money, because there's no way for her to have money, but exactly. It's her husband's money being used to be Poda Meiser that's not her husband's. Perfect. So it's basically a reversal of what we thought. We're using her money because it's his money. So we're using his money, but her Meiser, not her money for his Meiser. So now it works out that way and only that way, according to Rabbi Meir. Mashenken, according to Rabbanan, who hold that it's Mamon Hedyot Meiser Sheni, so it's like everything else. If she has an inheritance, then the husband is able to eat the peros of that inheritance and Konile Baal. If that's the case, she would be doing his shlichus because she's using his money to be part of his meiser. And therefore, if she's paying from him, she's got to add the extra chomesh. So it turns out we're talking about something completely different here. We're not talking about the machlokas about whether she can own money outside of her husband's control. We're talking about whether she owns meiser outside of her husband's control. Fine. Now, let's add, we've been talking about the way that an Eved is Yotze L'Cheiros. Interestingly enough, we talked about Kesev, and we talked about a Get Shichru. We didn't talk about like one of the main things, which is, what happened with Shein V'Ayin? What happens if the Odin knocks out a tooth, or knocks out an eye? So, the Braita says, well, of course, we have to add to this the D'Oraisa, which is Yotze B'Shein V'Ayin, plus, as we're going to see, we add all Rashei Evarim She'enam Chozrim. Now, these are generally called the 24 Rashei Evarim that are not Chozrim. This is a very misleading idea, as the Ran speaks out. There are not Chof Dalet Rashei Evarim She'enam Chozrim. There are dozens and dozens of things that can be knocked off in a body that are considered to be the equivalent of Shein V'Ayin, as we'll see. So why do we always talk about Chof Dalet Rashei Evarim? That's a completely different issue. In the Mishnah, Benogea the Dinim of Tzoraz, where we have the halacha of Lechol Mara Enei HaKohen, so we have a special halacha that tells us that the Kohen has to be able to see the entire Nega at one point. So the shear of the Nega at one point would be that shear that is, it's 24 sarot, it's fine, which is small, but still, if it's on the very tip, so let's say it's right on your fingertip. If it's on your fingertip, you have to move your finger a little bit in order for the Kohen to catch the entire Mar'eh, right? So then that finger would not be able to be metame b'negoyim. So because we have 24 such places, so we've got your toesies, and we've got your fingers. The Gemara goes through all of the 24, which we're going to talk about later, specifically going through the 24. So we've got these 24 tips that are on your body, that there are small enough tips that a Kohen couldn't see it all at one time. Because of that, we talk about Esrim V'Arba Evarim, where even if you knock off the tip, which would not have been something that would have been an aver for Tumas Negoyim, it would be a way for ever to be Yotzi. But obviously, it's not limited to Evarim that have sharp tips. And therefore, we're just using this a little bit. It's a little bit confusing because it is not really the limit of the number of Evarim. But anyway, fine. Says the Gemara, but where do we get this idea of other Evarim? So Bishlom Hashem V'ayin, it says, Beferish in the Torah, V'chiyake ish et in avdo, et in amato v'shichata, l'chavshi yishalcheno tachat eno, v'im shein avdo, o shein amato yapil, l'chavshi yishalcheno tachat shino. So that's a Beferish of Pasuk. It lists two things, only two things, shein v'ayin. How did we suddenly get to all of these other Evarim? Well, we're saying it's basically a mamatzino, right? It's dumya l'shein v'ayin. Anything which is like a shein v'ayin. So my shein v'ayin, what is the shein v'ayin? Well, it's a mum shebegalui. You can see that it's been damaged. And einan chozrim. They're not going to regrow. You can't regrow an eye. You can't regrow a tooth. Afko mum shebegalui enu chozrim. So because of this, we make a mametzino, anything that's like a shein v'ayin. Wait a minute, you don't make a mametzino when you have shnei ketuvim aboim ke'echad. Over here, if that's the din, then you could have said either shein or ayin, right? Torah didn't have to mention two examples. So if it's telling you two examples, what's the general rule? That when the Torah gives you two examples of the same din, so obviously it's saying these are the only two cases, because otherwise I would have given you one example. So why don't we say that? Why don't we say shein v'ayin is essentially it's shnei ketuvim aboim ke'echad ve'ein melamdim? Answers the Gemara, it is not unnecessary. It's basically one big example because each one makes it clear what it is that we're comparing it to. We need both because let's say the Torah would have said a shein. So then I would have said, okay, any tooth. Let's say this eved is a child and you knock out a baby tooth. In the Hebrew, shein chalav, a milk tooth. Kos of Rachman, therefore it says, no. The thing that we're talking about to go out free is something that is not going to regrow. So a baby tooth will regrow, we don't count that. So then just write ayin. But if I just would have written ayin, I would have thought, just like an ayin is an aver, which is there noticeably on an individual at birth, So too, anything that you would knock out that was present at birth, you would be motzi lecheres. Masha enkin, a tooth which is not visible in a child, in an infant at birth, that's not included, even though subsequently it grows, and subsequently it becomes an adult, a fully developed tooth. Maybe that's not something that you would be yotzi with. Therefore, we now know, even if it wasn't something that was congenital, and even if it has to be something that nonetheless will not regrow. So we know both issues. But you're making a mametzino, says the Gemara. Why do we make a mametzino? Why don't we say that what we have over here is a klal prat And kiyake is a klal, any type of marker. Then we say shein va'ayin prat. But the din is that when you have a klal and a prat, the klal consists only of those pratim. So we have now defined the entire set of kiyake. And it includes exactly two members, shein va'ayin, nothing else. Midi achrina lo, why do you have a right, therefore, to make a mametzinut? Ah, that's because at the end of the pasuk it says, La chofshi yishalchenu. La chofshi yishalchenu is another statement of klal. Chazar v'kalal. It could have just said chofshi, or chofshi hu, whatever. But why does that say, La chofshi yishalchenu? That means we are telling you that there's an additional yishalchenu. Well, what's the additional cases? Oh, that's the idea of klal pratu klal, right? So therefore, what we have here is klal pratu klal. The rule is, iatadan enakena prat, just like we just figured out that the nature of the common denominator of the set is that it's a mum shebegalui vein am chozrim, afkol ar mumim shebegalui vein am chozrim. But wait, why not say that the prat is one additional thing that you are very conveniently ignoring? Let's say that the prat is mefurash, that it's mumim shebegalui, yes, eno chozer, yes, but you left out the point that it's batel mimlachto, that the thing that you knocked out is not able, not only it doesn't regrow, but it is not able to be used. So Aloma Tanya, why does it say that talash bezikno v'didel bo etzem? Let's say the guy grabs his eved's beard and yanks it so strongly that he dislocates the lower bone of the jaw, which is then ripped out internally, and it ends up just withering away from loss of blood and so on. It does not grow out, but it doesn't do anything. There's nothing there that was being done by that etzem, and that therefore would fit the full klal pratu klal. And nonetheless, it says, eved yotze levem lecherut, that you actually do go out lecherut under those circumstances. Well, how is that? You didn't make the proper klal pratu klal. Well, okay. You're right. If it were a klal pratu klal, we would be forced to learn that it has to have a specific malacha. Okay, so let's learn lachofshi yishalchenu, not as a klal, but as a ribui. So basically, we're not learning it as a klal pratu klal. We're learning it as a ribui miut ribui, and then we're only going to exclude something that has nothing in common. So therefore, it would include even things that don't have an open begalui use, there's no particular function that is usable in the Eved, and it wouldn't matter. Okay, but wait, if it's a ribui, so then we should include everything, right? Ribui is marbe kol dover. So let's say you hit him on his arm, and now the arm loses its ability to move. You paralyzed him, but in the end it comes back. So why does it say in the Braita that if he kol ayado v'tzamta v'sofalachzor ein eved yotze bo lecherut, why don't we darshan the ribui that even that would be enough? No, because if you do that, that's silly. If you do that, there would have been no purpose to mention shein v'ayin at all. The point of mentioning the shein v'ayin is that it gives us some guidelines into what we're talking about. We're talking about knocking something out of its usage totally. Not that it's there, but it's temporarily unusable. That's not the point. So since it does say shein v'ayin, so there is a meaning to the ribui miut ribui. Okay. Now, the question is, our Tana, notice, did not mention this. How did the Tana not mention it? So this is dependent on the question of whether even if the Adon does this, does he still have to give a get shichrur in order for the Eved to truly own himself and be mutter to marry a Bas Yisrael? That's the question. If you need to give a get shichror anyway, so then there's no point in adding shein va'ayin, because you didn't add anything. The shein va'ayin only means that we will force you to write the get shichror. But we mentioned the get shichror. We don't have to mention all the circumstances that lead you to needing to write the get shichror, you see? So that's a completely different issue. Yitzi and Ariel, it's wonderful having you back, but I do not understand why the camera that you're now using is of a lower quality than the camera that you used to use, which gave everyone this wonderful view of Yitzi and Ariel, and now we're stuck with this, I don't know, 18th century of 500 megapixels or something. I don't know when they used to use that kind of stuff. Maybe it was the 17th century. What's going on over here? Maybe you just need to clean your lens a little bit, if it's the same camera. All right. You know, this is very high-tech Daf Yomi. I mean, either it's like done properly or... Okay. So now, this would be dependent on the machloket. Is this an actual Yitzhiya L'cheiros, or is this a catalyst to giving the Get Shichror, which is the actual Yitzhiya L'cheiros? So turn around on it. Bikulam Eved Yotzei Behem L'cheirut. It's true, but Tzarech Get Shichror. You're still going to have to write out a Get Shichror. And this, we will force you to write the Get Shichror, but she's not free until he actually receives that Get Shichror. Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir Omer, no, you do not need a get shichrur, and this is an actual yitzia, like the Braita says. Now, this was, a lot of people were involved in this machlokas over the Doros. Rabbi Eliezer said you need a get shichrur. Rabbi Tarfon said you don't need a get shichrur. Rabbi Akiva says you do need a get shichrur. And the Machrim Lifnei HaChachamim Omrim, we do not particularly know who this is, as Rashi always says when we use this term. We don't know who are called the Machrim Lifnei HaChachamim, but they say that Nir'in Divrei Rabbi Tarfon B'Shein Va'ayin. If you're talking about an actual Shein Va'ayin that's beferish in the Pasuk, then Enochinami Eno Tzarech Get Shichrur. But that's because the Torah openly says, HaTorah Zachtalo, Tachaseno, Tachashino, Mashenken Rabbi Akiva, who says you still need to write a Get Shichrur, that makes sense if we're talking about the other Esrim Va'arba. As I say, Esrim Va'arba is a misnomer, but nonetheless, it's always called that. So those other Evorim that we're including, that's a Knas Chachomim. What? What are you talking about, Knas Chachomim? We just learned it out with a Rebu Yomiyah. That ain't called no Knas Chachomim, man. Knasu? Kroy Kadorish. Where do you come off saying such a thing? No, it meant the Divrei Rabbi Akiva is because it's a Midrash Chachomim. So since it's a Midrash Chachomim, even though it's Midiraisa in terms of Ribui Miut Ribui, so, okay, now again, remember, according to the Rambam, there's a fundamental difference between Midrash Chachomim and straight out the Diraisas. This is why the Rambam keeps talking about Kesev Kiddushin being Midivrei Sofrim. Obviously, he doesn't mean it's not the Diraisa. But the point over here is that there's a difference in the power of that which it says beferish lachofshi, and that which we're darshaning should be included. Tosus learns it doesn't make any sense to make that distinction. And what it really means, at least this is what Rabbeinu Tam says, now there are many Rishonim that agree with this approach, that what it means is that the Rabbanan word goes there, that you have to write a get shichrur, because since it's not beferish in the Torah, that these other Evorim are also sufficient to force you to let him go, we're nervous that the Adon, we've seen this before, that we make takonas to make sure that nobody can go over to an erstwhile Eved and say, what are you doing out here? You belong to me. And make a terrible scene and a bizoyan for the Eved and a chashash on his yichus and so on and so forth. So because of that, the Rabbanan made a takana. Wherever somebody might make you trouble as an Eved that was freed, we force them to write a get shichrur. That's what it means, according to Rabbeinu Tam. So why does Rabbi Shimon learn that you still need a get shechur? I mean, it says beferish, at least the Shem V'ayin part, it says beferish. So where does he come from? He says, look, it says yishalchenu. And here is another beautiful comparison between the dinim of an isha and the dinim of Eved Knani. Remember, the only time we had that before was the Lala Me'isha to a Shifcha Knani. Over here we learn out, Lachofshi Yishalchenu from Vishilcha Mibeto. Wow. So this is now, that means we've got the Lala Me'isha in terms of the Etzem Metzias of a Get Shichrur, and we have the concept of Yishalchenu that no matter what, you have to actually make sure that there is a get, both for an Isha and for an Eved. So just like an Isha is only with a Sefer Kritut, which is a Shtar, the Eved has to go out only with a Shtar. So tan is Rabbi Shimon. So what does Rabbi Meir do with that? He says that you go out without a get shechur. Says Rabbi Meir, listen, if it would have said Yishalchenu Chofshi, I would have agreed with you 100%. The Chofshi comes through Shiluchim, like Shiluach Bibeto, that was with an Isha. But it doesn't say that, does it? It says Lachofshi, first of all, Lachofshi, that's a given. Then it says Yishalchenu. Fine, so that would mean that he is Chofshi right off the bat, and then you have to let him go. But it does not mean the Yishalchenu in that sense that it would mean by the Isha. Now, Tanur Rabbanan, when we're talking about Shiluach because of the Rosh HaYevar, so suppose you hit the guy's eye, the Eved's eye, and he goes blind. Or you hit his ear and he goes deaf. Obviously, it doesn't mean you have to cut off his ear when it says these issues. What we mean is that you make the organ unusable. So you hit him al ozno v'chersho. So then what that would mean is from the Yishalchenu that he would go out l'cheirut, Eved Yotzer l'cheirut. But suppose you hit the wall opposite his eye, or you hit keneged eino, you make a loud sound, keneged eino, ozno, and he no longer hears. Now, what we're talking about over here is that the guy went blind from the shock, not that he went blind because of a physical destruction of his eye. Now, even though this sounds crazy, believe it or not, it is rather common. It used to be known as hysterical blindness or hysterical deafness, which is a sort of medieval kind of term, but it means that someone's...
Ray Charles
was that way. Yeah, right. You're right. So someone is functionally blind, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with his eye. Or he's functionally deaf, there's nothing wrong with his ears. So this is called a functional neurological symptom. Or nowadays they call it conversion disorder. But the bottom line is that there's nothing physically traceable that's wrong. So causing blindness or causing deafness, in this case, we consider any type of mental response on the part of the Eved to be the Eved's doing and not the Adon's doing, as opposed to our woke world, which considers everything to be the fault of the person who did it. It has nothing to do with your insane reaction, the fact that I use the N-word. You're insane, you know, but I should be locked up, you know, because you decided to go crazy. Okay, so therefore, in this case, if there was no direct physical act that was done to the eye or to the ear, so then he would not be yotze lecheirus. Ein eved yotze behem lecheirut. Omer of Shaban the Rav Ashi, lememer de kola laf klum, but wait a minute. I mean, why don't we see this as damage that was caused by sound waves? When you made a noise, connected the ozone, so it's all very nice to say it was a hysterical reaction, you know, or conversion reaction. But the bottom line is, we said, I mean, that could be true even if you hit the eye or hit the ear. But we said that as long as there's physical contact with that eye or with that ear, that then the person who came into physical contact, the owner, and the result of that physical contact was blindness or deafness, that that would be considered to be Einai or Ozno, and he would be Yotzei L'Cheiros, correct? Now, if I can show you that sound waves are considered to be direct contact, so then you would be forced to conclude that the Eved would be Yotzei. Well, I'm going to show you that sound waves are called contact. Because we know that what we have in terms of the dinim of causing nezek. So, Hatani Rami Bar Yecheskel. A tarnagol was Moshit Rosho Lavir Klicheres, Vitakaba, Vishovra. Mishalim Nezek Sholim. What did I say? I didn't say.
We said Klicheres.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's weird. Okay. So, a tarnagol that sticks its head into this glass, and he gives, this tarnagol gives it the full scale lady in the opera, fat lady in the opera, of course, and shatters the glass. Okay, so then the halacha is, you gotta pay. So apparently, this is considered to be an actual coming into contact. Fine. The Omer of Yosef, Omer Beirav, forget about a tarnagol. How about a horse that neighs out in the yard, or a chamor that's braying out in the yard, and you've got these nice things in your house, and oh my God, they have given you a coal that was enough to be shavru kelim b'toch habayit. So over there, here we're going according to the armor holds niske tsroros is chatzi nezek. So mishamim chatzi nezek, and remember, tsrorot means. Basically, according to Zohar Chatzi Nezek, that an animal is walking along, hits a small rock, the rock flies out and smashes your kelim. So that's called a contact, but it's a secondary contact. So the din is over here. That is considered to be tsrorot, but if that's the case, why isn't this enough to be mechayev the odin to let go of his eved, because sound is considered to be nezek. Omalei, that's different, because if you're talking about a human being, the response to the sound requires mental processing, and whenever it requires conscious mental processing, I don't give a hang if you decided that your subliminal response to this was actually caused by the terrible stress that was a shock of trauma when you were serving in the army and a shell went off near you and this reminded you of the shell subliminally and because of that you lost your hearing. That's all a bunch of garbage. It's basically you who caused that interpretation. So kivan de bardatsu, we consider it to be ihu mivat nafshe. He has caused his own neurological neuropathy and therefore you're not going to be b'chayev the adin in this case, Kidatanya. Someone who frightens another person, hamavit et chavero, which causes him shock, gives him a heart attack, the guy's in the hospital, poter midine adam v'chayav midine shamay. There is a moral chiev to pay, but you're certainly not considered to be a damager. Ketza. So let's say you suddenly shout into the guy's ear, or you deafened his ear. You're putter. But if you grabbed this ear and you shouted, so then you would be chayev. Because in this case, in order, even if you didn't grab the ear, you grabbed him, you shouted into ear. So when you act on him directly, then you're considered to be chayev. Tana Rabbana. Hiko aleinu v'chahata. Now how about if the damage was partial? So, you hit him on his eye. You did not destroy the eye, but you actually weakened his vision. So now you knocked something out of kilter, and now the lens was displaced. He cannot see clearly. So what would be the din? This is why Yitzi and Ariel did this to their camera. It's to give you the sense of what kahata, would mean. Okay, so it became a little weak. You hit him on his tooth. Now his tooth became loose. So it was nadada. Now the question is, are they still usable? In other words, if the poor vision is sufficient for you to actually do what you used to do, and the loose tooth still allows you to eat a steak, so then if you could still use them, then ein eved yotze b'hem l'chirut. But if not, and you can't actually get along with this poor vision, I mean, you can get along because you have your other eye, but if this were your only eye, you would not be able, you can only see, let's say, something that's big, or maybe tell the difference between light and darkness. That's not enough to get along on. So then, Eved would be Yotze Behem L'Cheirut. Now there's another Braita that talks about the other direction. Suppose you start off with poor vision, or you start off with a loose tooth. HaReisha Haita Eino Kuhiya. Now the Adon comes along and takes away the remaining vision. Or if you have a tooth that was loose, and the Adon hits him in the mouth, knocks out that tooth. So then, im yochol yishtabesh b'hem kvar. So if you would have been able to use that eye to see, or this tooth to chew with before, and now it's been knocked out, eved yotzei b'hem l'chirut. But if initially it was not usable, then ein eved yotzei b'hem l'chirut. Now this seems to be the same halacha in a sense, right? That we're saying that the not being able to use the eye or the tooth is considered to be its loss, and therefore the Adon is chayev. And the second part says the same thing, that if it was an eye or a tooth that was not usable before, that it's already it was lost before. So why do we have to tell you both of these? No, we do. Because let's say we only knew the first Braita, where you started off with good vision and a solid tooth. And now, Mishum Demikor Nahura Bruria, Vahashta Nahura Kechisha. So I would say, okay, I can't see properly to be able to properly function. That I understand is considered to be Yotze L'Cheiros, Masha Inkein. There's a, certainly I would have thought, that there's a difference between poor vision and zero vision. So, Meikora Nami Nohora Kachisha, you have a little bit of vision, right? So I wouldn't have said that that difference is the difference. Say, you had poor vision. So then I would say that Emalo, in such a case, even though I could use it, but it's not exactly the real thing, right? It's not a completely full vision. Maybe I would think that the Torah only gave you a freedom in exchange for full vision. So there maybe I would say you don't go L'Cheiros. So therefore the Bryce is saying, no, the difference between an actual poor vision and a no vision is enough to be Yotze. It's only if it doesn't give you usable vision. On the other hand, let's say I would have said in the second case, of course, there's a fundamental difference between having zero vision and having some vision. So I would say, okay, in that case, because of the fact that the Odin blinded him, so Samuel Agamre, Mashenken in the first Braita, I didn't blind him. I caused him to have insufficient vision. But maybe the Torah is only talking about where I actually blind him. Therefore, maybe he doesn't go L'Cheiros. So I need, as you can clearly see, both of these limudim. Tanuramana. Now suppose this Eved has a fine doctor as his Odin. And the Eved tells the doctor that he's got a problem in his eye, and he wants the doctor to treat his eye. In those days, they used to use this kachol, as this was all over the world. They used this blue coloring, put it in the eye, and that was supposed to help the eye. And in doing that, he accidentally blinded his eye. Or suppose he has a dentist as an odin. So he tells the dentist that he's got a pain in his tooth, and he needs to check the bottom of the tooth, and to maybe do a scraping So he asks him, Lachtor lo shino? And in doing so, the dentist ends up detaching the tooth. Then the Eved laughs all the way to the bank. Sichek be'adon v'yatza l'cheirut. He managed to arrange things in such a way that he's yatza l'cheirus. Even though the guy didn't intend to do this, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, no, that's not true. Why do you think that the Torah added the word v'shichata? It says beferish that he not only was yakeh, but it says v'shichata l'chavshi yeshachenu tachat eino. So v'shichata means that there is basically a destructive intent. He's going to destroy it. Well, over here he didn't go to destroy it. He went out to fix it. So that would not be included according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. And the Rabbanan, how do they explain the fact? The Torah does say v'shichata. So why are you saying that in trying to fix the guy's tooth or trying to fix his eye without any intent to damage him, and if it nonetheless was destroyed, you do have to send him? What do they do with the word of v'shichata? Rabbi Elazar Omer. Here we have an interesting case like this. Suppose the master is an obstetrician. Now, he's got a shivcha who has gone into labor and is stuck. And what happens, it's a breech delivery. He's got to flip the fetus around. So he puts his hand into her womb, flips the fetus, but in doing so, he accidentally had gouged out the eye of the fetus. So, Haresh Oshit Yadol Lemei Shivchato V'Simei Ubar Shebemei'er. So, in this case, he would be Potter, and he's not able, not Mechuyev, to send her out. Why? Because it says V'Shichata. And over here, he is attempting to fix her. So, Ad Shechavein L'Shachata. And therefore, in this case, he had no intention of touching the eye at all. That's the difference. So where he was dealing with the eye, or he was dealing with the tooth, so over there, Ein Achinami. According to the Rabbanan, he would be Chayev. But if he didn't even intend to touch it, so that means that there was no issue of Eino at all, then you would be Potter. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, why doesn't he need it for that case? Why doesn't he agree with the Chachamim? He says because the Torah could have written v'shichet. Why does it write v'shichata? So v'shichata comes to tell me something more. It means that where you did not, in a case where you wanted to do something, if it just wrote v'shichet, fine. So if I wanted to do a kachul to your eye, and you had no desire to hurt it, so there would be enough to write v'shichet. So why does it have to write v'shichata, right? Which means that it's talking about that you did want to work dafka on the eye. But then that would mean v'shichata is adding an additional case. So that if, therefore, when we're talking about v'shichet or v'shichata, so we have a complete limud over here, that in the event that I'm not interested bichlal in working on it, so according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, even if I am interested in working on it, and it's v'shichata, and I'm working directly on the eye, not like the Rabbanan who say, no, it only means you didn't want to touch the eye at all. On the contrary, it says you do. It says v'shichata. So therefore, according to Reb Shimon ben Elazar, if I did not have a kavana to be mashchit, even though I wanted to touch the eye, v'shichata, and not where you did it without kavana. Om Reb Sheshes, I have another interesting halacha. Suppose an eved was totally blind, and now the odin comes, and he knocks the eye out physically, so the guy no longer has an eye. The din is, if he was chitata, so he knocks the eye physically out of its socket. Eved yotze b'em l'cheres. Why? Because there's a difference between a non-functional organ and a mechuser eved. and I'll prove it to you. My taima mechusar averhu vitana tuna. I can bring this raya from a clear-cut brisa. Tamut v'zachrut b'vehima, ve'ein tamut v'zachrut be'ofot. So we have the pasuk that strangely talks about the din of a mum, and it says over there, asher yakriv korbano l'chol nidrayem l'chol nidvotam asher yakrivu la'ashem lo'ola. It has to be l'ritzonchem tamim babakar baksavim uvayizim. Now, that means that the din of tamut is restricted to animals, babakar baksavim uvayizim. Even though the Torah has allowed me to bring an oaf for a korban chatas or for a korban oila, in those circumstances where I can, the halacha does not demand that it has to be tamim, or that it has to be zachar for that matter. It says zachar tamim. So therefore, what we see is that there's the din of tamut, and there's a din of zachrut, where the Torah demands zachrut, let's say for the oila. That's only true of a behema, but there's no such halacha of tamut v'zachrut be'ofot. Now, I would have thought that in that case, it would make no difference what level of lack of tmimus we're talking about. So therefore, suppose yafsha gapa, suppose nikta'a ragla, suppose nechteta ena. So you've got a bird that has no eye because it was knocked out, or it's missing a foot, or one of its wings actually completely dried out. Now it's no longer there for all intents and purposes. That is also kosher. Talmud lomar. Therefore, it says min ha'of. So im min ha'of karbano. This is the ola. Im the ola is a karbano min ha'of. Ooh, why do you say min ha'of? Just say of. That tells me mina of velo kola of. You can't bring any old oaf that you want. And therefore, if it's a mechusar aver, then it's not usable. So what does that show? That there's a profound difference between the loss of the use of an organ, which would be a mum, so the bird is blind. That doesn't matter. But knocking out that eye makes it a mechusar aver. Therefore, by extension, I would say exactly the same situation is true of an odin who knocks out the physical eye. So just like we have rayas, that there's a difference between partial vision and zero vision, there's a difference between having the aver present but not usable and not having the aver present at all. And in the same way you considered the former to be a reason to be yotzei l'cheiros, so too, min hasvara, the latter would be. Okay, so now we've examined an entirely new issue, which is applicable only to Eved Knani. Remember, as we learned before, lo teitzei kitzeta avadim, there's no halacha of yitzia, not in the Oma Ivriya and not in the Ivri, from kitzeta avadim with roshei evarim. And again, roshei evarim is something of a misnomer. So we'll call it just Shein V'ayin.